Super Talk Mississippi Media Production. You're listening to Thunder and Lightning on Super Talk Mississippi, covering Mississippi State sports like nobody else. With Sports Talk Mississippi's Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk of 24/7 Sports. Powered by Taylor Construction Equipment. Whether you're looking to rent, lease, buy, or for service, contact Taylor Construction Equipment today at taylorconstructionequipment.com. Now get ready for Thunder and Lightning.
This is Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk Mississippi. Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk here with you on a losing track here Thursday morning. Thanks for joining us here at supertalk.fm or wherever it is that you get podcasts from. We appreciate all you guys out there, our great listeners, especially our servicemen and women out there taking care of us. I want to thank our sponsors over at Strange Brew Coffee House and Churn and Spoon Ice Cream. Start your day the right way with a trip to the drive-thru over at Strange Brew Coffee House here in Starkville or at Brupolo over in Tupelo. It'd be a little weird, Robbie, if Brupolo was in Aidenton.
That would be very weird.
Now, it's probably close enough to Starkville. They're okay, though.
Yeah. You know, just come down.
Yeah, same as Starkville. Same with Sessoms, Longview, and Osborne. They're all good.
Yes.
So.
Octok.
Octok is not an issue. Craig Springs, you know, you're all good.
Matheson.
Is
that a little too far?
Well, that's in a different county. So
it is. It's not in Octavia Hall, but it's.
Yeah, maybe you know, we'll see.
Matheson has a coffee shop, so.
All right. Well, there you go.
It's not bad either.
Yeah.
I don't drink coffee, but my wife likes it.
We're going to be, by the way, you got a gift card today. But I've been meaning to give you this for like
I did. Big
like
shout
a
out
month.
To shout out to Coach Haynes over there. I'm guessing it's Brad Haynes. I know a couple of other Coach Haynes, but I'm guessing it's Brad.
It's got to be Brad,
Brad, if this is you, thank you very much.
Yeah. Very nice of you. Wherever you
this
are.
This will go directly to my wife, probably.
Exactly.
But I will probably get like a scone or something like that of the sort. Maybe a hot chocolate.
A delicious blueberry muffin, perhaps.
I could do one.
You'd be talking to that. There you go.
We're not quite yet to the Christmas trees.
No. Gosh, those are coming, though.
That Miss Brew puts together. But if Shane wants to...
6 months from now.
If Shane... I mean, I'm not going to discriminate against those either. Like, one of those in June.
Why can't we just have, you know, a summer tree cake?
Yeah, can it just be a pine tree? You know?
That's what I'm saying, evergreen.
And we can sprinkle, like the sprinkles would be like pollen.
Pollen.
There you go.
That's genius. a million dollar idea.
Genius.
We just genius. Came up with it. Wherever you are in our great state, you can enjoy Strange Brew Coffee each and every morning. It's just a click away. Go to strangebrewcoffeehouse.com and order it to be shipped right to your home. College Corner and College Corner Store, .com is the place to find the maroon and white merchandise you're looking for. Guys, Father's Day is just around the corner. It is sneaking up on us. You need to grab Dad a new shirt, a new polo, a new baseball cap, or just something new from College Corner. Check out their two locations in Jackson, Ridgeland by Fleet Feet, Flowood by the Half Shell, or you can shop online at collegecornerstore.com. And also, you know, if you're a USM fan listening, don't. If you're a USM fan listening, right now nobody's got a better selection of Southern Miss merchandise as far as, you know, what you want to take down to the Super Regional than College Corner. Check them out, collegecornerstore.com.
I'm trying to mend some
don't,
fences.
Just don't. Restaurant Tyler, Starkville's best restaurant. So, I'm having oven trouble.
Uh-oh.
My oven is messed up. Guy comes out today. He's like, it's like $100 to visit just to look at the oven, right?
Oh, forget it.
I was like, oh, okay.
You got to be kidding.
Well, I was like, all right, well, I need to find out what's wrong with the oven. And he gets done and he quotes me, this is what it's going to cost to repair it. And I just looked, I was like, I could buy a new oven.
Yeah, that's usually how it goes.
So I told him, I was like, we'll just pay for the visit here. Nice to meet you. And send him on his way.
That's kind of ridiculous.
I'm getting to my point, though. And that my point is, now my wife can't make what I wanted for Father's Day. I wanted her to cook one of her specialties for me. Can't do it. No oven. So I'm going to say, why don't we just go to Restaurant Tyler on Saturday instead?
That basically solves your problem.
Problem solved, right?
There you go.
There it is. So that's what I'm going to do for Father's Day. I suggest you guys do it too. Or if you want to take Dad to Sunday brunch, that's always a great idea as well. Or any day is a great day to head to Restaurant Tyler. 16 Priority One Bank. I feel bad for Priority One Bank sometimes because I don't have like a personal, relatable experience because they're down in Central Mississippi.
Yeah.
Like I feel bad. Like I can never be like, you know, I was in my Priority. I can't do it. Like I need to stop in a Priority One Bank and just
meet some people,
meet some folks, shake some hands, and be like, all right, I met them, and now I can tell you they're great. I'm sure they are. They are good people because they are a great local bank. They do great stuff in each of their communities. And if you're a Priority One Bank customer, you already know that. So I'll tell you what, if you are a Priority One Bank customer, let me know how that's going for you. Let me know what they're doing for you. So tweet at me, at Brian Haydad, and we'll talk about it. I hope you guys will give them a chance. Look them up online, PriorityOneBank.com, to find the bank branch nearest you and open an account today. Let Priority One Bank make you their priority. We are 12 weeks away from Labor Day weekend. What does that mean? It means it is time to start talking about opponents. As we have done for the past few years, not only here on Thunder and Lightning, but going back to the B&B show, we do our opponent previews in reverse order so that when we finish up, we're on week one, we'll be talking about Southeast Louisiana. Now, I'll go ahead and tell you, looking ahead, I don't know how much we'll really talk about Southeast Louisiana.
Oh,
no offense to the Lions. The Lions is what they are.
Correct.
But
they used to have state's number in baseball.
They did. But that being said, we just don't, you know, we don't focus too much on the FCS teams. We never have. So what does that mean? It means we're starting at the back end, right? Which means it is time, as always, I love doing it, here in June, to talk about the Egg Bowl. Last year's Egg Bowl, to me, was one of the more surprising results of Mississippi State's season. Maybe the most surprising, even more so than the loss at Kentucky. Because I just didn't trust Mike Leach to do what needed to be done and to test that weak Ole Miss run defense. And if you want to say it wasn't weak, well, then look what happened to them the week before against Arkansas. And thankfully, it was sort of taken out of his hands. You know, it started pouring down rain, and he really didn't have any choice. And on top of that, Will Rogers played terribly in this game a season ago. Turned it over three times, took a couple of sacks that were completely avoidable. I've said it a few times. I said if you switch the quarterbacks that night and you give State Dart, State might have won this game by 40.
Mm-hmm.
Because defensively, they were dominant. Defensively, they had a plan put together that absolutely shut down the Ole Miss rushing attack. Shut down Quinshon Judkins, pushed him around all night, dominated the Ole Miss offensive line.
Lane Kiffin's head was all over the place.
That had to play a role in it. And we have an interview coming up. We'll play in the second half of the show with Michael Borky, and he talks about that. Because Kiffin clearly was not locked in for this game. But I'll be honest with you, I don't know how much difference it would have made deep because State was just so much better than Ole Miss up front that night,
mm-hmm.
defense, that they were just going to win those matchups. This year, back in Starkville, Arnett's first time. Arnett and Kiffin don't strike me as they'll have the friendly relationship that Leach and Kiffin did. Just call me crazy on that one.
Yeah.
And as always, it's a huge game. And it's a game that, you know, for me this year, when I look at Mississippi State's schedule, it's going to be possibly win 8 or maybe even win 9 if things go really well for the Bulldogs. And I think, once again, I look at how State was able to run the football on Ole Miss last year in an air raid offense, and I look at Ole Miss's defense. I don't feel like it's improved, and I feel like State is going to be a more run-heavy team this year. That, to me, is a formula to win the Egg Bowl yet again.
You would think so. This game has proved to be a little unpredictable. I thought, you know, 2 years ago, Ole Miss was just the better team. State was just not going to win that game. And 2020 was the same thing. Both of those years, they were just the better team.
And in 2020, State was in that game.
Yeah.
And had a chance to win it, or had a chance
to tie
it.
Well, you take away the fumble by Austin Williams, they win.
That's a 14-point swing.
I think they win the game.
Yeah. I mean, I don't. People forget. Corral was really good in that game.
Yeah.
But Will Rogers threw for an Egg Bowl record yards. I think 450, something like that. 460. That's an Egg Bowl record.
The fumble really was kind of the.
It was the game.
Yeah. I think they threw a Hail Mary in the last play to try to tie the game or.
State threw a long pass, and they were down to like the 20, and then they ran out of time.
I thought they threw it in the end zone. Maybe not.
Well, I mean, they threw the last play. Yeah, the last pass.
That's what I'm saying. It was like a Hail Mary. Yeah,
they didn't catch it.
Yeah, so, I mean, State had a chance in that game. 2021, they just, I think early in the ball game, in the first half, State missed some huge chances dropping touchdowns. So the game has still been really competitive, even when Ole Miss has had the better team. The big thing this year for Mississippi State is, can Will Rogers channel his emotions? Because I think the last 2 years he's been a little too fired up. And, I mean, you think about that.
That's a good point.
How can you be a little too fired up? For a quarterback, you can't be emotional. You can't. You got to be like a pitcher. If you look at a pitcher, they might get a little fiery at the end of an inning or something like that, but they are usually the pitchers that are able to have success are the ones that are with playing within themselves and not getting too hyped up. They're not overthrowing. They're not getting too upset about the umpire. It's the same thing with a quarterback. The quarterback has got to be able to channel his emotions. And Will Rogers, I believe, wants to beat Ole Miss more than anybody else. So for him, I think last year that was probably the biggest issue. And then on top of that, you've got a drizzling rain most of the game the last 2 years, and you're running an offense that's going to throw the football 60-plus times a game. It just was not very conducive for Will Rogers to have a ton of success. So this year, Will Rogers has got to be, I guess, less emotional. And maybe he's not showing it, but in his head, I think he was trying to do a little too much. So this year, he's got to play a little more within himself, I think. And that's going to be the biggest thing. I think State's going to have the horses to win this game. And, you know, Ole Miss, you know, looking at their schedule, again, it's not going to be easy.
They do have the benefit this year. I mean, last year, not that I'm trying to take up for them, but tough to go on the road and play Arkansas 5 days before the Egg Bowl.
The Arkansas
they got
game,
beat up in that game.
Yeah, a few times they've played Arkansas before Mississippi State, and that's just a mistake. This year they made sure they changed that up. They're playing ULM. But 2 weeks before they play, I mean 3 weeks before they play A&M and then Georgia. So it's, I mean, the ULM game allows them to reset a little bit, but again, the back half of that schedule is not going to be easy. Vanderbilt and ULM notwithstanding, I mean, and Vanderbilt's probably going to be much better this year.
Well, don't forget, Vanderbilt had the lead on them at the half last year, and then it just got out of hand.
Yeah. So
they couldn't cover Jonathan Mingo the one time in his college career.
Yeah, like half of his yards came in that game.
Okay. I did the research on this because I did not understand why he was a second-round pick. In his college career, four-year college career, 17% of his college yardage came in that one game.
Wow.
Played 4 years.
And I would like to see like his numbers against legit competition in comparison to...
They are not good.
Yeah. It was strictly a testing thing. Which, I mean, he didn't get drafted that... where did he get drafted in relation to AJ and DK? They got drafted the same round, right?
He got drafted around the same spot. He was the 39th pick
and
of the draft.
I don't think he's in... And anywhere close.
So you got,
to those
you got me wondering.
Yeah, and I don't think he's. I mean, I think people see the one on his jersey, and you know he's got kind of a similar body style.
He's picked 16 picks ahead of AJ.
Oh my goodness!
Which means he went ahead of DK too, right? Because AJ was picked ahead of DK.
See, that's the thing. Like he tested better than those two, but those two were gamers.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, he didn't test.
Let me double check that.
I mean, DK had some freaky testing numbers.
DK was the 64th pick.
Yeah. That shuttle. Remember the shuttle they were talking about? The shuttle was killing him. Yeah. Dude was running like a gazelle and could jump out of a gym, and his hands are the size of your head. But that shuttle, man. Anyway. yeah, I mean, I don't really see it with Mingo like those two. But
I never did.
We'll see.
Mingo had, all right, so Mingo had in his career 400-yard games. One against Vanderbilt, one against Central Arkansas, one against Tulane, and one against Kentucky.
There you go.
He had a 90-yard game against Vanderbilt as a sophomore. He had a 99-yard game against Austin Peay as a junior.
Let's go Pete.
And then his senior year, he had 89 yards against Texas A&M. I mean,
what did he do against State last year?
In the Egg Bowl?
Yeah.
7 catches for 40 yards.
Yeah, and he got popped by Jalen Green that one time, and like he
against State, 3 years in 4 Egg Bowls, he had 2 for 15, 3 for 33, 4 for 21, and 7 for 40. I mean, he never did anything.
Yeah,
I don't know how we turned this into the bash Jonathan Mingo fest.
Well, I don't mean to bash him. I just don't see the hype.
I was never
comparison. I think he's got a much greater chance of being Laquon Treadwell than he does AJ.
The only I made a bunch of predictions last year. I got State completely correct.
Mm-hmm.
Ole Miss, I missed by one game. I had them beating Kentucky. And another one I said was I thought it was a joke that Mingo was getting all this all SEC hype.
Yeah.
I said, I guarantee he will not be an all-SEC player. He made second team for the coaches, and I was just like, how? How is this possible? He had one game.
It was the Vanderbilt game. Yeah. They looked at the final stats, and there you go.
But you know what's funny about that is, and this is something I'm going to talk about with Borky in just a minute, is Ole Miss doesn't have any SEC-proven receivers now. Mingo is gone. Malik Heath is gone. And they are just relying on these two guys. I mean, their two top guys are going to be guys who played in Conference USA last year.
And nobody's bringing that up.
I mean, they put up huge stats in Conference USA. Trey
but
Harris
it's Conference
and
USA.
Franklin, Zachary Franklin, I think is his name. But, I mean, it's Conference USA. So, like, are these guys going to be, you know, like Mekhi Polk and come in and be immediate contributors and huge numbers? Or are they going to be not that?
Well, I mean, last year, didn't they have a couple of guys that came in,
they
blew
really
up
do
and
much.
Never heard far from them?
Heath was their best guy.
And that was a guy that nobody was really talking about. It's just, it's tough to have to rely on the transfer portal every year for these big spots.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got people already hyping up, you know, Ole Miss. You know, this is going to be huge for Jackson Dart. This could be a breakthrough season for them and all that. We don't know that. We haven't seen these guys against SEC teams. We don't know what they're going to look like. Last year, you know, we heard all these great things about the kid from Central Florida or something. And who was the other one they had?
Well, they got the tight end, Trigg, who didn't do anything.
Yeah, he never played.
They got another guy from, like, Missouri.
Did they?
Yeah.
The only guy that they relied almost 100% on Jonathan Mingo and Malik Heath. And those other guys just kind of, you know, floated off. I think it's just a very dangerous game to be turning over your roster like this and having to rely on these skill players the way that you do. Now, the running back situation looks great.
Yeah.
Again, I think they should be fine there. And I think that their offense is still going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Offensively,
they should
be fine. I don't see what everybody else in the media is, and some people are skeptical, but you know, a lot of people are talking about, you know, this team could be a dark horse and stuff. I don't see it
because defensively I just don't feel like they've improved that much,
and you've got to be able to stop some people.
So
they had 400 and something rushing yards against Arkansas and got obliterated.
Yeah. So Ole Miss last year, let me do some quick math here. 8, that's 11, 12, 13. They completed 239 passes last year. Mingo and Heath caught 111 of them.
Yeah.
The next guy down is Jordan Watkins, who had 40 catches. And then, then you get into guys like Trigg, who only played 7 games. And then your two running backs had 15 and 12. I mean, they just...
Well, that's kind of been their thing, too, with Kiffin. They have one or two guys.
Yeah, which is fine.
It was Elijah Moore.
Yeah.
And you're one.
Yeah.
Then it was, who was the other guy?
Braylon Sanders.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but you got to have that guy.
Yeah, if that guy hurt, then you're
Elijah Moore was SEC proven.
Yeah.
Braylon Sanders was SEC proven. Heath and Mingo had played in the SEC. None of these guys have played in the SEC. So you have that question mark. Again, I think they'll be good offensively because Judkins and I think Bentley's going to be fine for them as well. And Dart's a good runner, too.
Mm-hmm.
They're so good at running the football. It's going to open up the passing game. I don't have any concerns about that. But they didn't go get any kind of real difference maker in the transfer portal on defense, in my opinion. So, I mean, they got some guys.
No, they just got role guys, in my opinion.
The guy
that they got from NC State, you know, that they were just – it was going to be like State's backup nose tackle.
Yeah.
You know – he didn't really do anything at Alabama, and he was just okay at NC State. I mean,
And Nebraska.
Nebraska, that's right. I don't know why.
Stephon Wynn was his name, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Red and white uniforms.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I don't see, you know, they've gotten some defensive backs that were good. They got the linebacker from Louisville, but again, you're not, I don't see a ton of guys out there that is really going to flip the script for them. Now, I think their defense could be better because I think they're going to have a defensive coordinator that knows, you know, more of what he's doing than.
And that's the next thing, right, is Golding.
Yeah.
Is better coach, no question about it. I mean,
Partridge. Should be. I mean, he spent so much time with Nick Saban, you got to pick up something.
Got to pick up something. And here's the thing with him is that he's going to be a good recruiter because whatever you want to say about him, he can point to a bunch of first-rounders and say, I coached them.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you want to say, well, it's Alabama. It doesn't matter. He can,
kids will see that, and that's all they'll hear.
That's all they'll hear. And I think, look, the guy was good enough to last with Saban that long. He's obviously a decent coach.
Yeah, right? He can't just completely suck.
But
I mean, Saban's not going to keep him on board that long.
Offensive coordinators can work around talent issues. They can out-scheme, right?
Mm-hmm.
Defensive guys have got to have talent.
Yeah.
Like, there is no...
And I want to see what he does without Alabama's talent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's a valid question mark. We've seen Alabama players go to the NFL,
mm-hmm.
And they haven't produced nearly the same way that they did in college because they didn't have the talent around them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the talent is more superior in the NFL, more stable across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've had some great ones go to the NFL too, but it doesn't always translate for those guys because they're not up here and everybody else down here like mm-hmm. they are in college. Pete Golding is going to have less talent at Ole Miss, no matter how well he recruits there. He will always have less talent than he did at Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
They will never have a defense at any point like they did at Alabama
yeah.
when he was there.
Yeah.
So how does he adjust to that?
Exactly.
That it's going to be a lot easier for him to coach those kids at Alabama than it is at Ole Miss.
I agree.
We will find out exactly how good a coach he is.
I feel like we're, you know, and I know our most of our listeners are like, yeah, kill him. I feel like we're just killing Ole Miss. I think Ole Miss is going to be a 7-win team this year. And, you know, to be honest,
It's just the hype stuff.
Well,
like,
the hype is out
I don't
control.
Think they're going to suck. I don't
right.
think they're ever going to be terrible under Lane Kiffin.
Right.
But I just want to expose some of these things that people were completely glossing over.
And they're paying him $9 million a year. They
yes.
expect more than 7 wins. But when you look at their schedule, I mean, right off the bat, they're losing to Alabama, LSU, and Georgia. There's three. All right? And then, so to get to 9 wins, they can't lose another game. They can't lose to Auburn. They can't lose to State. They can't lose to Texas A&M. They can't lose to Georgia Tech. They're going to lose some of these games. I have them 7-5. I have them losing to Georgia, Alabama, LSU, Mississippi State. And if I had to guess, either Auburn or Texas A&M. Arkansas. They'll lose to Arkansas because Arkansas is going to line up with KJ Jefferson and Rocket Sanders and do the exact same thing and just run at them.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
the Egg Bowl.
It's a really interesting year for them.
The Egg Bowl is going to be really interesting for Kiffin because if he loses it, it's too straight. And then if I'm right and he's 7-5 and they're paying him $9 million a year, they can't fire him, obviously.
Right.
And they wouldn't. But
they
would be really encouraging him, like, look, if you find another job this year, let's just all.
Well, now you've kind of priced yourself
mm-hmm.
out of him doing that. Because there's going to be a lot of teams that aren't going to be willing to pay him.
That's true.
When he can make $9 million at Ole Miss, you know, why would somebody, unless it's like Texas A&M, which I couldn't see that.
That's not a good fit.
Yeah.
He wouldn't
So why would you go spend $9 million on a guy that is
starting to tail down? Me with Kiffin is Florida.
Yeah, that would be a good fit.
If they suck again, if Napier is like 6-6 again, they just say, you know what, it's not working. We got to pull the trigger again.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, they're probably going to hire a new athletic director at that point because that wouldn't
get back to back.
I wouldn't let Scott Strickland hire a third coach, but this is something to think about. This game is going to be very interesting. The reason I like State today in this game is because I feel like State's going to be able to run the football, and I feel like Ole Miss is not going to be able to stop the run, and so there you go.
Yeah.
And then,
you have an older team.
This is a veteran team. That's going to play into it. And Ole Miss, I mean, we've talked about this a lot of times, and I talk about it with Borky. We'll hear that in just a minute. That in the two philosophies of program building, State is still doing sort of the old school way. They use the portal, but they use it sparingly. And Ole Miss is fully committed to the portal. They're not really recruiting the high school kids as much. I just don't know. I mean, right now it's 1-0 State on that account.
I feel like Kiffin is trying to change that this year.
Well, I think Golding is helping him in that regard.
It's like they're recruiting Mississippi Yarder
I think
and high school kids.
Part of that is, and look, these last 2 years in the state of Mississippi, not great in terms of the talent pool. This is a much more talented year, and you've got those connections. You might as well use them.
Yeah.
You might as well use them. So we'll see. All right, let's move on into that interview. That's brought to you by our friends over at the Mississippi Beef Council, who want to remind you that beef, it is what's for dinner. This weekend, if you got the chance to cook out, throw some beef on the grill. Steaks, burgers, picanha, tri-tip, or do what your friend Brian's doing. Grab a couple of chuck roast. You can smoke them just like a brisket, or you can go that Mississippi pot roast route. It's great on the grill. I'm telling you, just give it a couple hours smoke, then wrap it up in the pan and put the butter and the au jus and the ranch in there. And buddy, that's fine eating just a few hours later. So I got an out of Rocky Fall on that one. So whatever you're looking to cook this weekend, make beef the star of the show. Beef, it's what's for dinner, thanks to our friends at the Mississippi Beef Council. Two Brothers Smoked Meats in the heart of the Cotton District is the place to find smoked Southern soul food. Not to mention the fact that, by the way, I need to mention this. That is a Bulldog Initiative business. If you are someone who wants to do business with people who support your Mississippi State Bulldogs, Two Brothers is one of them. So when you make a purchase there of delicious smoked wings or perhaps a plate of pork rind nachos, well, there you go. That money is getting right back to the athletes that you support. Head over to the Cotton District and enjoy some smoked Southern soul food at Two Brothers Smoked Meats. Great products, great service. Every business likes to promise it to you. They deliver it to you at Advantage Business Systems. And they have for 48 years. That is an incredibly strong track record. You can't stay in business that long unless you've taken care of your customers. And that's what they do at Advantage Business Systems. They treat you like the neighbor that you are. They're a Mississippi business just like you. If you need a new copier, printer, computer, whatever it is, give them a call. And then if you do need service, they've got you taken care of. No 1-800 number, no being on hold for 30 to 40 minutes. Just the kind of service you expect when you work with a local business. 601-362-9192, or you can visit them online, absms.com. Find out how Advantage Business Systems will help your business do business. The Rogues Collegiate Collection. We're talking about Father's Day. If you get Dad a great new polo from the Rogue, he is going to be really, really happy because he's going to get a stylish polo, comfortable, great name brands, and it's going to have the logo that Dad wants on it. The M over S, the state script. He doesn't have to worry about looking like a walking billboard. So head to the Rogue or shop online at therogue.com. Don't live the three-stripe life. Shop at the Rogue. Breakfast at Dolce sounds like a great idea. 7:30 a.m. Tuesday through Saturday, they are open for business, and they want to see you in there. Grab a great cup of coffee, grab a bagel, grab a breakfast sandwich, and get your day started on the right foot. Great food there, and of course, for lunch, selection of artisanal, I love that word, artisanal grilled cheese sandwiches, and then anytime you want to just have a sweet treat, they've got it at Dolce with their incredible selection of gelato. But breakfast is where it's at. Head over to Dolce, 509 University Drive, to grab breakfast today. All right, let's go into our interview. I talked earlier with our friend Michael Borky, the big golden Adonis of Sports Talk Mississippi. Got his thoughts on the Ole Miss Rebels and the Egg Bowl. 12 weeks to the start of the college football season here in Mississippi, which means on Thunder and Lightning, we start our opponent previews. And as always, we go back to front. So that means we get the joy talking about college football's best rivalry here on the first.
Wait, I thought you wanted to talk about Liv.
I'm going to talk about a far more bitter rivalry, and there will never be a merger between Mississippi State and Ole Miss the way there was with the PGA and the Liv golf tour. It's Egg Bowl time. It's Michael Borky from Sports Talk Mississippi. Let's just get right into it. Last year, I thought that result was incredibly surprising. In Oxford, I did not think Mississippi State was going to win that game, and I thought the biggest surprise was how well Mississippi State played defensively and how they shut down Quinshon Judkins in a way nobody else had been able to, and they dominated Ole Miss at the line of scrimmage. When you look back a year ago at what happened that night in Oxford,
which, you know, we're going to look back a lot on Mike Leach's final game as Mississippi State head coach due to tragic circumstances. What stood out to you the most as you were watching that game?
You know, it's crazy. It wasn't the football game. It was Lane Kiffin. Yeah. And I mean, that night was so bizarre because there was a football game and a bitter rivalry at that. And Ole Miss lost the football game. And all anybody wanted to talk about after the game was, well, is Kiffin actually staying or not? I mean, it's like the game was secondary to people's mind because of the drama that had happened. And what the, I mean, it really happened the week before, mm-hmm. and then really picked up on that Monday. And that's all anybody was really talking about. It was the strangest egg bowl that I've ever been a part of. I moved here.
Oh, man.
In the fall of 2010.
Yeah.
So, you know, and some of the freeze ones were what they were, but that was the most bizarre post-game reaction to an egg bowl I've ever seen from the Ole Miss side, because people were, they were just mad at everything, not even about the game. It was like, this guy's going to leave for Auburn, and he leaves by losing the egg bowl at home. That was just like a secondary piece to the Lane Kiffin saga, which, of course, ended the way it did. But, yeah, physically, Ole Miss got whooped that night, and in part because Mississippi State had and has probably the most underrated front six in the SEC, if not the entire country, and whooped Ole Miss up front that night. And they couldn't really do anything as a result. I mean, I saw some people criticize the game plan after the game. And my reaction was, hey, look, you know, criticize Lane Kiffin for how he's handling the Auburn stuff. But how many coaches can win when they're getting beat that badly up front? I mean, what can you call that works when you're getting your you know what's kicked as bad as they did all night?
Mm-hmm. Let's look at now we're here with Ole Miss, another year of, you know, rebuilding their team through the transfer portal. So a lot of new faces, but offensively, the two main faces return, Jackson Dart and Quinshon Judkins. Those guys, I think, are going to be potent offensively. But when you look at the receiver position for Ole Miss, you know, last year they had a couple of SEC proven guys with Malik Heath and Jonathan Mingo, and those guys delivered for them. They had good seasons. This year, it looks like they're relying on some new faces, some guys from Conference USA who put up gaudy numbers over there, but not SEC proven. Are you concerned about the receivers at Ole Miss?
So I like what they have, but I don't think I love what they have, if that makes sense. I like when you can, for example, the guy that they just added, we talked about on the radio show yesterday, is Akari Franklin. I mean, he's a back-to-back 1,000-plus yard receiver in the Conference USA, but at least you have film of him playing, you know, good teams. He had a really good game against Houston last year, for example, which is not the SEC, but still, I mean, he is a highly productive wide receiver. So, you know, at least you have solid, if nothing else, but that's kind of what the room is right now. It's Jordan Watkins, I think, is the most overlooked player on this team. He got hurt for a period last year. He was a Louisville transfer for whatever that's worth, because that's how they build the roster. But he was really solid for Ole Miss last year. And because he got hurt, the numbers don't match up. Plus Mingo and Heath being there, as you mentioned, that's a guy that nobody's talking about, that I think you'll look up and he'll have like 800 yards receiving next year, and he won't be a household name, but he can be that guy. But outside of him, it's two guys that played in the Conference USA, really productive, but that's where they played. Dayton Wade, who flashed in his very limited options for Ole Miss last year, the walk-on or former walk-on, maybe they've given him a scholarship by now. Jalen Knox, who was a Missouri transfer that has yet to produce at Ole Miss, spent most of last season hurt, had a good spring for whatever that's worth, but a lot of people do. And then a true freshman. So it's Jordan Watkins and then a bunch of dudes that have not done it in an Ole Miss uniform. It is fascinating. They've done it, just not at Ole Miss. So we'll see if it translates. It looks like it's talented and experienced, but I don't see, you know, Aiden Williams can become that guy, the true freshman, but I don't see a Jonathan Mingo, an A.J. Brown, or any of these recent Ole Miss receivers that went early in the draft on this team right now. I don't see that right now.
Offensive line, you mentioned, you know, a few minutes ago, the way State was able to manhandle them. They bring back a lot of experience from guys who played a season ago. Losing Nick Broeker is a blow there. That was probably the best guy of that group. But up front, they look like they should be a group that can protect Jackson Dart. And from the running game, we know that they're going to be good there. But do you have any concerns there as well on the offensive line?
Yeah, of course, because of Jackson Dart did one thing really, really well last year, and he was really good in the pocket. Now, you know, his game obviously wasn't anywhere close to perfect, but he masked a lot of their issues on the offensive line. If you look at like their sack numbers, for example, you would think they'd be great at protecting the quarterback. They were not great at protecting the quarterback. Dart was just, that's one thing he does really well, is he's elusive in the pocket. So it's the same guys minus one. They've added a transfer from UAB, Quincy McGee, who's from Hattiesburg, for what it's worth. But they've added him. They added a Washington transfer on the offensive line. It's the same guys, though. So will they take a step forward? I know they fired their offensive line coach. And speaking of NC State, I was looking at getting off track. But yes, they hired NC State's offensive line coach, who 2 years ago had, Ike Ikwunu, who got drafted by the Panthers. Yes. And so they really like him, but we'll see. It's largely the same guys. How much of a difference does a new offensive line coach actually make? We're about to see.
Defensively is where all of my questions about Ole Miss lie. When you look at the yardage they gave up a season ago, I mean, 457 yards to Tulsa, 403 yards to Vanderbilt. That's not great as in and of itself. But then you play Auburn, 301 yards rushing, 441 yards of offense, 500 yards of offense to LSU, 480 to Texas A&M. Actually played pretty well defensively against Alabama, all things considered. Some turnovers cost them there. We all saw what happened in the Arkansas game. And then against Mississippi State, you know, they gave up 97 yards rushing, but you and I both know that's sack adjusted. State was well over 100 yards with Dylan Johnson and Marks, and now State's going to be more of a running team this year. Is Ole Miss going to be able to stop teams this year? I really feel like this is not a good defense when I look at them on paper.
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. How quickly can Pete Golding's new scheme make them better? And there's something that I pointed to 100 times, and I keep going back to it because I think it's really, really important. Sam Pittman was basically trolling the Ole Miss defensive staff during that game. Mm-hmm. His halftime interview and his postgame interview, he basically said, well, they lined up with negative numbers in the box, and so we just ran right at them. And then they're not adjusting, so we're just going to keep running at them. And they're not adjusting, so we're just going to keep running at them. It was just a math equation, and he was kind of like, had this half smile explaining it, like, those guys are idiots. They're losing the numbers battle. And I don't care if you have the best players in the world. When you've got fewer of them in the box than your opponent, they're still going to beat you running the football. So it depends on how quickly this team can learn a new scheme and if they have the personnel to run it. Because I do think Pete Golding is an upgrade from Chris Partridge. He's got years of experience doing it, as opposed to Partridge's just 1 year of doing it, and that 1 year didn't go well. And look, I don't think he's going to have top 10 defenses every year at Ole Miss in the same way that he did at Alabama. The personnel is different, and it's just not going to go down that way. But can he make them competent? And that answer is you hope, not you, the State fan listening to this, the thousands of you listening right now hope that it doesn't work out. But the Ole Miss fan hopes that the new scheme can mask some of what happened last year. Also, they portaled well, but they portaled well now. And so you've got a bunch of guys that are going to join this team after spring practice in the summer. Can a guy like Isaac Ukwu, the former first-team All-Sun Belt guy from a year ago from James Madison, the edge, can he come in, learn the system, acclimate, and be an impact guy that quickly? That's a lot to ask. Now, he's a good player. James Madison is not in the SEC, obviously, but he can help this team. Stephon Wynn can help this team. He's recorded stats in five different college football seasons, four of which at Alabama. So he can help right away, but how quickly can some of these guys acclimate? They, by my count, so they got two defensive backs in the post-spring portal, three defensive linemen in the post-spring portal, and another defensive back who was committed in January, but academic stuff, he had to figure that out, and now he's back. All on the defensive side of the ball, and every single one of those guys, they're going to need to play. So, I mean, that is a lot of you have to get this evaluation right, and oh, by the way, he's got to move to town, get acclimated with the team, learn the system, and be ready to play in 3 months. That is a lot to ask. On paper, in the post-spring window, they've gotten better talent and personnel-wise for sure, but games aren't won on paper. How quickly can they acclimate will be the key for this team exceeding or underachieving in expectations. It's those seven guys, really, will be the difference.
A season ago, and now we'll get the Ole Miss fans riled up here that are listening. I said Ole Miss would go 7-5. I've had them losing to Kentucky. That was the only game that I missed. This year, I see them at 7-5 again because we're replacing Kentucky with Georgia, and I think they're just going to lose the same games they lost a season ago. I think they'll lose to A&M. I'm sorry, not A&M. I think they'll lose to LSU, Alabama, Arkansas, and Mississippi State. I guess what my question is would be, 2 years into this philosophy of we're just going to do the portal thing, if you're 7-5 again, if you've lost to Mississippi State 2 years in a row, at some point, do you have to adjust that? Do you have to go back to, okay, we've got to get some high school kids in here and develop them and try to keep them in here for and build up a roster that way? Or do you just continue to do what you're doing?
I think you're already kind of seeing it. All of the above can be true. Mm-hmm. This is a really good high school class in Mississippi. That helps. Mm-hmm. I think the addition of Pete Golding has changed recruiting philosophy. He's like got boots on the ground, if you will. I mean, he's everywhere and grinding in recruiting this state and beyond. And I think there might be some kind of, I'm not going to do the Lane Kiffin's a changed man thing because I want to see one off season where he's not actively trying to get a different job at a in-conference school before I believe the whole I'm changed now, I'm different kind of stuff. I don't buy that until I see it actually in action, but it does seem like they have altered their recruiting approach with this cycle. They are far more locked in on in-state guys, and they're getting a bunch of them. It's June, so there's a long way to go. But so far, they're getting a bunch of them. They're in on a bunch of them. They're really engaged in high school recruiting. I think you're starting to see some philosophy change already. But let's pretend for a second that you're wrong by one game and they go 8-4.
Okay.
10-2, 8-4, 8-4 at Ole Miss would be the best three-season run since when?
59, 60, 61. I mean, off the top of my head, you know?
Yeah.
Johnny Ball.
So, I mean, Hugh Freeze went 9-3. What did he go? 8-4? Or was it 9-3, 9-3, and he lost the Peach Bowl and won the Sugar Bowl, right? Isn't that what they did?
Yes. So 9-4, 10-3. And but then the next year they were 5-7.
5-7.
Yeah.
So it would be the best 3-year run in Ole Miss football.
I guess the year before that they were 8-5.
Right. So since the Freeze era, it would match the Freeze era, and that would be the best since before my dad was born.
Mm-hmm.
So if they do roll out another 8-4, you've got to look at that stretch as consistent and better than the school's done in the modern era. And so it's hard to question the philosophy, but the other side of that coin is, are you paying $9 million and then $2 million for your defensive coordinator alone and doubling your recruiting budget and doubling your support staff and investing millions and millions and millions of dollars like you've never done before to go 8-4 in consecutive years?
Yeah. That's the big question for Ole Miss is the juice source, the squeeze.
Yeah, what an interesting balance that is, right? Because yeah.
On the other side of the coin, State's not spending as much. You know, I'm not saying they've gone cheap, but when you have a first-year head coach, you know, you're not going to give him $9 million a year. I mean, I really do think if Leach were here, they probably would have bumped him up to like 6.57.
Something like that.
And would have been totally justified. But, yeah, State, you know, going to be towards the bottom end of that. But the results, you know, State won 9 games last year, and this year we'll see what happens. But between that and the, like I said, the difference in recruiting, State is still high school focused. They use the portal to fill holes here and there, but they're never going to recruit 15, 20 guys out of the portal in one class. It's just, they're just not going to do that. So it really does feel like, you know, as much as this rivalry is a philosophical difference in every single conceivable way, let's just add another one. The way these two programs are being built is now added to all the other social and philosophical constructs that surround the Egg Bowl rivalry. Well, I guess
perceived social, because I have anecdotal evidence. I haven't spent my entire life in Mississippi, but man, in my neighborhood, there are Ole Miss flags and state flags everywhere. It's like we're in the same neighborhood. We mm-hmm. live in the same town. We work the same jobs, go to the same church. Yeah. And you guys are trying to tell me how different you are when, like, I've got my neighbor Tim down the street, big state fan, lives across the street from an Ole Miss alum. It's like, you guys tell me how different you are, but you're the exact same people, man. You cut your grass the same way, too.
I'm just saying, there are differences, Borky. I'm just telling you. I guess my last question is this. You know, the Egg Bowl, it comes in cycles. You know, State wins a couple, Ole Miss wins a couple. I truly believe neither team will ever fully separate from the other. That we will never see a time like we had in the 60s where State was a consistent 4-5 win team and Ole Miss was a consistent 8-9 win team. I just don't think those days are ever going to happen. Can these two programs at least thrive to the point of, you know, everybody's happy together? Can we have a time where Ole Miss and State are both winning 8-9 games a year and everybody's pretty happy about it? Or is there always just going to be this, you know, this cycle of, okay, Ole Miss is down, but State is up, and then it comes back around?
Oh, that's a great question. Oh, man, that's a great question. I've thought that the two can't play, like, high-level football at the same time. Mm-hmm. Consistently. Now, I know what 2014 was, but I'm talking about on an annual basis.
That's not. I mean, what happened 2 years later? They were both
exactly
5-7.
So I don't know if that's possible. I'm curious to see, and I know it's your favorite topic in the world, when the dust settles on all this, like there's an SEC contingency, including Nick Saban and Walker Jones from the Grove Collective. Did State send a representative? Is Zach Selman there? Is Arnett's there? So Zach Arnett's there. If they can get anything done, whatever happens, because they're not going to sit back and just let it be as it is. Things are going to change depending on who changes it. Somebody's going to. When the dust settles, I'm curious to know what that will look like, because I think approaching an era where there is at least a perceived attempt to balance resources, that's where Ole Miss and State can catch up. Because Ole Miss and Mississippi State will never have the resources of Texas A&M unless a bunch of you guys start striking oil at your hunting property. Like there's just that will never exist. But if there is a way that they can balance the scales a little bit, yes, they've got a big stadium, but as we've seen, what does Texas A&M have that we don't have here in Mississippi? What do they have in terms of history? And even like the campus and the town and stuff. I mean, you've been to College Station. What do they have that can't be obtained here? The difference is they've got all this expendable money without a limit on it. If they can find a way to have some level of balance, you'll see that come up. Because when you go to Starkville, when you go to Oxford, and you go to Tuscaloosa, what's the difference? What's the difference?
Yeah. I mean, it's just
they're college towns.
Yeah, they're just college towns. Yeah, I mean the only difference is, I mean, like Tuscaloosa. I mean, if you, I don't, you know, I'm old enough that I went to Tuscaloosa in '97, and you know, like it's Tuscaloosa in '97 isn't that much different than Starkville is today, because Starkville has grown, but Tuscaloosa has grown at that exponential rate because of Nick Saban and because of, you know, they their students and their money's pouring in. Yeah,
it's why I always reference back to the NFL. I mean, Tell me what New Orleans is like compared to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
The media market, the money, the businesses, the investments, all that. But those two football teams are on the exact same playing field. And college football should strive to find ways to make that part of what they offer. Because if it was just, if the NFL was structured like college football, the Saints would lose and the Bills would lose every single year, every game they play. They would always lose because you would have these big markets with all this money and all these resources that would just take over. That would be college football. But instead, the Saints can build rosters that are really good, and the Rams can build rosters that are really bad, and vice versa, equally.
We'll see what happens. This, like I said, philosophical differences. I've always said this about State and Ole Miss. I know you're not a big Harry Potter guy, at least I don't think you are, but there's a quote in there, where neither can live while the other survives. I've always believed it was a zero-sum game with Mississippi State and Ole Miss. We'll see if it can be a little different. Both teams won, you know, 8 regular season games a year ago. We'll see what this season brings. And, of course, we'll see what the Egg Bowl brings and all that comes with it. We're 12 weeks away from the start of college football, which means we're 25 weeks away from the Egg Bowl. Plenty of time to talk about that. I'm sure we'll do it on Sports Talk Mississippi with Michael Borky. Thanks, man. Appreciate your time.
Anytime.
Borky comes across in that interview to me as he thinks Ole Miss, I think he's kind of like us. It's like they can be good, but they have a lot of questions. And you and I are the two that are like, why is nobody bringing up the questions more? Because the questions are big. The defensive question, you know, you look at Ole Miss over the last decade of defense, right? Since Kim Dichie left in 15, they have not been good defensively. They had 1 year, 21, where they were above average. They were above average. They had Sam Williams getting a lot of sacks. A Chance Campbell was good for them.
They were
in the
bad
middle.
Early in the season.
They were bad.
They got
it turned around. Yeah. A lot of that was Sam Williams just decided he was going to start second, a quarterback every play.
Yeah. And I thought Durkin did a solid job.
Did a good job. But for the most part, that's the outlier, right? 16, 17, 18, 19, and then 20, and then last year, awful. Yeah. And especially against the run. And now that Mississippi State is more of a run-heavy team, I think it just favors the Bulldogs in this game.
I just feel like a lot of times people get caught up with the flashy stuff with Ole Miss. You know, they get
well, I think it's,
everybody was so going crazy over this quarterback room. You can only play one.
I think people like Kiffin too.
Yeah.
Like outside of Mississippi State fans, Kiffin is well liked. He's funny. He does funny stuff on Twitter. And so that just turns you into, well, I'm gonna think this guy's gonna be successful.
Yeah.
When at the end of the day, I mean, look, his 21 team really good, right? 10-2. I think they probably would have beaten Baylor in that bowl game if Corral doesn't get hurt. Even though it would have been more interesting because Baylor was bringing the heat that night. They sacked the quarterback 7 times. But that was a great season, and you can't take that away from him. But when you're a team like Ole Miss or Mississippi State, and Dak Prescott proves this point, when you have an NFL quarterback, that's like half the problem solved, right?
Yeah.
And then it's just, is everybody else okay? If you got decent players around an NFL quarterback, you can figure things out. State did that with Dak. I mean, how many, you know, offensively, how many NFL guys were on that team other than Dak Prescott? And I mean guys who played more than a year or got a training camp invite. The answer is none. Defensively, you know, McKinney, obviously really good. But, I mean, there's not a – I mean, get Chris Jones, obviously really good. But for the most part, Dak was the team.
Mm-hmm.
Ole Miss, when they had Eli Manning. I mean, there's just not – how many other guys on that team were drafted from the skill positions? None.
Yeah.
Having an NFL quarterback makes it so much easier. And then, you know, I said that last year. I said when teams like Ole Miss and State lose NFL quarterbacks – they take a step back. They went. Ole Miss did. They went from 10 wins to 8.
Well, and you can argue heavily that Matt Corral is the best quarterback they've ever had, and
I think Ole Miss fans get upset when you do that, but you're absolutely correct.
And that's tough. That's tough to replace.
Yeah.
Mississippi State had to replace Dak Prescott with Nick Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
Who was a great athlete, and they won 5 games.
Yeah. And in fairness to Nick, I feel like he can't bear the brunt of too much of that because defensively they were so bad.
They're bad,
that year.
Yep.
But at the same time, I mean, if you have Dak Prescott, defensively or not, you're going to beat South Alabama.
Right.
If you have Dak Prescott, I mean, you go back and watch the BYU game.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to win that. Dak Prescott wins that game. So for Ole Miss, I like Dart. I think Dart's one of the top 4 quarterbacks in the SEC, in my opinion. If you said rank the top 4 right now, it's some combination of Jefferson, Daniels, Rogers, Dart.
Yeah.
Rattler's on the outside of that for me, and then everybody else is kind of unproven. So we'll see. I like State's chances in this Egg Bowl as we sit here in June, and then we'll see what the season brings us. So next week we'll talk about USM. We'll have Luke Johnson on with us. talk about the Mississippi State and the Golden Eagles and a lot more. All right, tomorrow's show, you know about it. We will be live at the Little Dewey. We will be talking about catfish. We'll have some great guests, including Mississippi State Athletic Director Zach Selman. Plenty to talk about with him with all the SEC scheduling stuff going on. So we're looking forward to that. Plus, we're looking forward to eating catfish, to be totally honest with you. So that's going to happen tomorrow. And then that show will be up on Friday, which is, you know, when you talk about tomorrow. Tomorrow, we're recording it, and then Friday, you get to listen to it. But it's tomorrow.
Unless you're there.
Unless you're there, yeah. And we do encourage you to come out and you come say hello. Pictures are $25, and Robbie and I will sign anything for $50.
That's less than what Bret Hart's going to be asking people to pay for at the Comic-Con, I guess, next week.
I will also tell you about how terrible a person Bill Goldberg is, if that's what you want to hear. We'll see you tomorrow at the Little Dewey. Until then, for Robbie Falk, I'm Brian Haydad. Thanks for listening to Thunder and Lightning on Super Talk Mississippi.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.